KSL at Night.
And you're back with us on KSL at Night alongside Rusty Cannon. I'm your host this evening, Greg Skordis. And Rusty, I don't know if you remember, of course you remember, in 2021, a young couple driving through Utah, sort of a trip of a lifetime. They've got this cute little van they're driving around in. Gabby Petito and her fiance, Brian Laundrie, they get stopped by Moab police after they appeared to have had a fight. And it was clear that something was up there. The police, you know, you watch the video of the police talking to each of them and really feel like, and I hope I'm not coming across as biased, that the police were trying to de-escalate the situation. They were trying to do what they could to make sure that these two were safe, that Gabby was going to be safe, that Brian Laundrie was going to be safe. They did separate them for a while. Unfortunately, it ended up horribly. She is dead. She's missing for some time. Brian Laundrie drives back to Florida. They later find Gabby has been murdered. He commits suicide in Florida and is obviously the cause of her death. So recently, Florida has passed a law where police officers are required to do what's called a lethality assessment. Now, I think Utah requires officers to do that too, and I'm not sure whether that was in place at the time of this specific incident, but I think it is now. But to help us sort of understand the law, what this lethality assessment means, we are joined this evening by Alex Stone, ABC News correspondent in Los Angeles. Alex, thank you for joining us this evening.
Hey guys, how are you doing?
We're great. So tell us what Florida did and what law enforcement is required to do now that they weren't required to do before.
Yeah, this is something that, at least in the current form that it is in Florida, is somewhat unique. There are other versions of it in other states, and Utah does have a version of it as well. But this was really pushed by Gabby Petito's family, and they're trying to get all states to do this. That essentially what Florida is saying is that when a police officer arrives on the scene of a domestic violence situation, that there will be 12 very specific questions on domestic violence calls that they then have to ask by law. And, you know, a lot like reading Miranda rights, I assume that they will keep it in their pocket and then pull it out and say, okay, I've got to ask you these, and then go through from there. And this was really the Petito family pushing it. This is Gabby's mom saying,
I can say that if they had used a lethality assessment, I'm certain my daughter would be alive today. They just need more training.
And she's talking about the Moab police officers there, and that this is really a series of questions. In Florida's case, it'll be, did the aggressor ever use a weapon against you? Have you ever been choked by your aggressor? That they want these police officers, when they arrive on scene on any call, if it is domestic violence, try to better understand if a victim is in danger, what the likelihood is that they're going to go from there and then be murdered. I mean, it's gruesome, but are they going to go and be murdered? And Gabby Petito's mom saying,
I think it would have opened up a door for her to be able to tell them what was really going on. So many people have a Gabby in their life, a loved one, and they might not even know they're going through something, but that's why it's important to learn the signs and ask the questions and just be there for them.
So the law is going to take effect in Florida in 3 months. And critics say, and there are those pushing back against it, that this puts too much pressure on street cops for it to be them deciding, is this person going to be in danger of being murdered? And did they go through these 12 questions, and then the officer asked to determine, based on the answers, what they do moving forward? Victims don't have to answer them. Some police groups are saying, look, hire domestic violence experts who respond to these calls with armed police instead of making police do this on top of everything else they have to do. But supporters are saying, look, the reality of it right now is that when you call 911, it's going to be patrol officers who show up, and they are the first responders to get there, and they have to decide what they're going to do. And there's a lot of criticism over what Moab police and the other agencies who are with them, what they did and didn't do, and there was fallout from that. Some who don't believe that they did enough or knew what questions to ask or what to do. So this is something that they want to spread to more states. And I believe you're right. I'm looking at a number of questions that first responders are given in Utah, it appears. 11 questions, yes and no, or not answered, to go down the checklist. These are a little bit different what Florida is doing, but generally same idea.
So, Alex, what happens after these questions are asked? I guess in the case of Florida, I mean, you mentioned that puts quite a bit of a burden on the officers. Are there next steps outlined in the law, or is it just simply up to the officers after that?
Well, generally, it's going to be, at least in Florida, up to the officers to say, okay, here's what the answers were. What do we do next? The questions are meant to elicit answers that may give them some idea and the appropriate questions to ask to know moving forward that, you know, what they asked her in Moab may not have been the correct answer to question to get the answer that that could really inform them of what that next step may have been. Now, you know, after the fact, we can discuss that they should have done this, should have done that. There may have been nothing that, that they could have done. They did separate them that night. The Brian Laundrie went to a hotel. She stayed in the van. And then they, on their own, came back together. But maybe there was something that they could do. And that's where victims' rights advocates are saying that, that there may have been, whether it had been arresting one of them because they both claimed that they had been assaulting the other, or separating them for longer, or filing charges, or making them go a longer distance away, whatever that, that would have been. The other part of it is a victim doesn't have to answer these questions in Florida. They're not mandated to answer them. But, again, these victim rights advocates are saying, and domestic violence groups are saying, yeah, but based on asking the right questions, it may get a victim thinking about these things in their own mind and okay, maybe I am in danger. If you're talking about, have you ever been choked? Was there ever a weapon involved? Asking the right things may get the wheels turning a little bit so that they know that they're in danger, even if police are gone and they haven't asked questions, trying to get the ball rolling a little bit to get them help. That, you know, that oftentimes they may not answer them, but they may help themselves.
And Alex, it seems to me that in Utah, at least, before the lethality assessment became part of the officer's protocol, they at least separated the parties, and they did that here. I assume that, and that wasn't even a judgment call on the part of police officers. It's always seemingly been the case, at least since the legislation was passed here in Utah. Does the lethality assessment, let's say you check the boxes and you get five yeses and three noes, or five and seven, whatever. I mean, I assume it takes a little bit of the subjectivity out of it for law enforcement and say, look, if you get, so you know, 8 out of 12 yeses, maybe you need to take one of the parties away.
Yeah, and a lot of that will be training that, that goes into it and what the state decides to do with this law, that, that it is not in effect yet. Yes, but a lot of it will be what the answers are as well. That, yeah, you can have a checklist of yes and no, but some of it's going to be what are those answers? Not just a yes and no, but, you know, explaining, well, yeah, he did have a weapon, and here's how he or she used it or threatened me with it, or, you know, what some of the situation is. Things to kind of spark what the need is going to be for that next step, instead of just showing up and not really knowing, not all patrol officers knowing the right questions to ask, and just kind of overall seeing the situation and being, well, you know, both parties were aggressive toward each other. Yeah, just don't be together tonight and then move on. But to really inform, you know, think about DUI laws over the years and what officers have learned about DUI assessment and how to evaluate. Didn't used to be that way. It used to be kind of more an officer showed up and went, eh, you generally look all right. And you let them drive or not drive or take their keys or, you know, tell them to pick it up in the morning. That doesn't fly any longer. And the training has, and realizing the signs, it's all progressed. And this is, you know, like that of realizing those signs and knowing when there's danger.
Alex Stone, ABC News correspondent in Los Angeles. Thanks for joining us this evening.
You got it. Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
And that really is interesting, Rusty, that we have these lethality assessments. I talked to a victim advocate recently who was really at the forefront of Utah having that. Mm-hmm. And law enforcement hasn't pushed back on it. I mean, it's another tool for them, but it's also another burden for them. Like mm-hmm. he said, like reading the Miranda rights, you got the lethality assessment. But yeah, I think it's good. I think it's something that maybe nationwide we're going to see. When we come back after the break, something right up your alley. Five things to know about tax deadline.
Yes, tax time's coming.
Just around the corner. Yep. Stay with us.